Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I'm going to be on today with Madeline Colburn, who is from Missouri, of Colburn Enterprise, and she is also a strong advocate for the incarcerated men and women throughout the country. There are many today that are celebrating a very special event, and that is the death of the Christ Jesus, about making mistakes, the ransom sacrifice. I want to say something on this topic because we have mass incarceration. We have people in prisons who have made mistakes and those who have not made mistakes and still are incarcerated under wrongful convictions. One of the reasons why we speak of the Christ and the ransom sacrifice is because this being that was hung on a stake or a cross came down into this world because of mistakes made from the very beginning of Adam and Eve right up until all of us born into sin. That's why a ransom sacrifice was made. No priest or pastor, no imam, no rabbi can take the place of Christ because no one is perfect. We live in a country where there's so much differences and divisions also between religions. When I talk about the Most High, I talk about Jehovah Jireh, I Am, Yahweh, Allah and Allah, another truth people are aware of, because we live in countries that have different languages. I went to a church one time and had a person, a pastor, talking about the Muslims and the Arabs and their God, Allah. My mother was a Catholic. She was Lebanese. And when they spoke together, her sister, they spoke of Allah, because Allah in the Arabic language is God. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Muslim God or our God, it's a language spoken in Arabic. So we have to talk about some of the differences and divisions in this country between races, between religions, people who are so judgmental. And when a pastor was talking about their Allah, and I brought it up to him, he was apologetic because he said he did not know. Religious leaders teaching people about God and talking about Allah, whom they do not know, is a language spoken by many people who are Arab. This is a lack of knowledge. We have people in this world today who are becoming pastors and priests based on other people, human beings, that taught themselves or were taught. That's why I always say study the Bible scriptures and learn about the different religions and what it's all about. Jesus came into this world, and many think that Jesus, they have different thoughts. Some believe he's a prophet. Some believe he's the God himself. Some believe he's the Son of God. And when Jesus spoke to his disciple, Simon Peter, and asked Simon Peter, "Who do you think I am?" He said, "You are truly the Son of God." Jesus spoke of his God. And that's why when I pray, I thank God. I thank Jehovah Jireh, the I Am, the Most High, the Yahweh, Abba and Allah, for the ransom sacrifice. Now, I also want to talk a little bit about DNA, because DNA traces all the way back to Africa for all mankind. So why does man hate so much over the pigmentation of skin? We have to look at a lot of these things because a lot of this relates to mass incarcerations in the United States. A lot of it. We have to know that we are all brothers and sisters, whether we like it or not. It's like Ishmael and Isaac in the Bible. Ishmael from the slave woman of Sarah and Abraham, and Isaac, the son of Abraham and Sarah. Those two were both enemies at one time, but they came together and they made up, and we still have divisions between the Arabs and the Jews, which affects the whole world. So we're going to talk a little bit about today with mass incarceration. We're going to talk about why people have stumbled. We're going to talk about the hatred, the racism, the lies, deception, corruption, lack of compassion, judgmental people who are also sinners. And I want to remind people who are for the death penalty and who are for life and life without parole. I want to remind all of those righteous people about those who were innocent, those who were wrongfully convicted, those who were executed and later found to have been innocent of their crime. Who is held responsible? Who is held accountable for that crime? Many of you or many people that you might know who have been so much for the death penalty, who have been so much for life without parole, because you feel it's your prerogative, it's your duty to judge someone you do not know. And we know there's so much corruption in the courts today. There's so many people that are being imprisoned because of evidence tampered with, because of lies, false witnesses, and all of these things. In the book of Exodus, in the Bible, Exodus 23, verses 1 to 3, it talks about the people coming together in the multitudes to do evil against someone. I hope that that blood that was shed on our behalf, whether it be God or the Son of God or the prophet, we know that Jesus the Christ gave his blood on behalf for all of us. And getting back to Simon Peter in the Bible, when Jesus asked, who do you say I am? He said, you are truly the Son of God. And we know that there is a God. And we know that we're all going to be coming before this God. However you want to name him, whatever you want to call him, the Most High, Jehovah, Jehovah Jireh, the I Am, the Yahweh, Abba, or Allah, we all have to go before a God. And the decisions we make while on earth about another person, whether it be a man, woman, or child, and whether they should go to the death penalty, say, serve life without parole, life sentences, we have to be held accountable for our decisions. The people we're going to have on this show today, Jerome Eubanks, Anthony Wilson, Kevin Dolphin, all wrongfully convicted, all serving years and years and years in prison before they were able to confirm that these men were truly innocent. Who is being held accountable for the lives that were taken in their youth? Who's being held accountable for the damages done to them? And we have to be sympathetic to all victims, no matter who they are. People seem to forget when they talk about what about the victims. They seem to forget about the hundreds of thousands of victims who were wrongfully accused, and those who were put to death, and those who are still sitting in cells, even though they've been confirmed that they were innocent and are innocent. So we're going to listen to these men today talk about their experiences. And look at, their experiences are going to be told on the day that millions are celebrating the death of Jesus Christ, who gave his life as a ransom sacrifice to save all of you. So let's welcome our guest now. Now, we have Jerome Eubanks on with us. We also have someone else that has come on, 0467.
Hi, that's me. It's Christine.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Christine is the sister-in-law of Lawrence Drink, and Lawrence is traveling today. He said he might try to come in, but he wasn't sure, so... Welcome aboard, Christine. We're going to
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We're going to hear from Jerome Eubanks right now to tell his story.
Awesome. Great.
Okay, Jerome, please tell your story.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say happy Easter to everyone, and I truly hope everybody's having a blessed day. And to my brother Lawrence, I hope he's driving safely and having a safe, wonderful trip, him and his family. And to all the people that is incarcerated, I'd just like to say a special prayer to all of y'all, because my heart truly goes back to y'all in this terrible time that y'all are going through. And I want y'all to know, please believe me, I know how you feel and I know where you're at, because I've been there. many, many, many nights and many, many, many days, years, months. And for me, my story, it starts out, it's I like to say it's an American dream, but it's an American nightmare, no matter how you look at it, because I had so many people fail me in my life as a kid, as a youth. And that led to my incarceration because I couldn't read, couldn't write, didn't have no direction, didn't know where I was going. And the people that I was listening to was people on the streets and people that really meant me no good. So I advise everybody, please, if you know any youngsters that's struggling out there, please, God only knows, give them a lifting hand and help them out. Show them some real direction in their life so they won't end up like me. Because my life was stolen from me. No matter how you look at it, it was totally stolen. I was robbed for a chance at a good life. But I do admit to my shortcomings, I played a part because I didn't know how to read. I didn't know how to write. And that made it so easy for the justice system to get me. It just made it easy, no matter how you look at it. But I was incarcerated 15 years for aggravated sexual assault. I was registered as a sex offender for 12 years. So altogether, I did 27 years of my life to the justice system, a crooked justice system. And that's what I like to say it is. I was just cast into the land of the lost, just forgotten about. And I just hate for that to happen to anybody else's kid, son, husband, or wife, or anything like that. But like I was saying, I got sidetracked. I spent all them years in prison, and I can honestly tell everybody, prison is a very bad place, especially for an innocent person. The things that you have to go through and put up with, and the heartache and pain that you see, it was like torture. Every day and every night, I feel like I was tortured. I was forced to live somewhere and be somebody that I wasn't. I wasn't that rapist. I wasn't that sex offender. I maybe didn't misled, but I wasn't none of them things. But here I was, cast in the amongst of all these guys and the guards. And I can honestly tell you, the guards, the way that they treat you in there is like, it's unreal. It's like they treat an animal better than they treat you off in prison. They really do. I can remember the time I got jumped on by the guards. I can remember times that I seen guards jump on other inmates. I can tell you about the time that I seen a guard kill an inmate. And God only knows, I can tell you about the time that inmates killed themselves because they couldn't handle it. Not only did you have guards putting pressure on them, you had inmates putting pressure on them. And they couldn't handle it, so they ended up killing themselves. I really wish society would really open their eyes and pay attention to what's going on off inside of these prisons. I really wish they would, because it's truly a terrible place. There's no justice. There's no rehabilitation. It's just a place of torment. That's period. It's a place where they torment people, human beings, men, women, and kids.
Jerome, when you came out, did you have any, did anyone try to help you? Did anyone try to rectify the damage that was done to you throughout your life? Were there any apologies?
None of that. Well, see, that's why my story is so strange, because I did 10 years of my 10-year sentence. I did the whole sentence. And once I did the whole 10 years, I got out for 10 years. And I was a registered sex offender. And then they arrested me again for failing to register as a sex offender because I didn't agree with it. I wasn't a rapist. I didn't do it. So I didn't follow the rules that they set forth. And they rearrested me 10 years later, and they gave me 5 more years. And when they gave me 5 more years, that was up in the time when they came, the Innocent Project came to see me, and the district attorney came to see me. But about that time, I already did the 5-year sentence. I was like about 8 months from finishing that 5-year sentence. And so I got out on parole. I finally made my like 3rd parole. And I don't know why they kept setting me off. I never figured that out, why I kept getting set off after set off after set off. But they kept setting me off. So finally, I got out and I registered again for like another year and a half for sex, registered as a sex offender. And then in the process of me registering and stuff like that, they finally overturned my conviction and exonerated me. But nobody never really helped me out, or I was like a forgotten soul, because there's another person that was involved in my case. And his name was Darrell Johnson. I mean, I can't remember, but I think his name was Darrell Adams. And he's the one that got the Innocent Project involved in the case, because they gave him 25 years. So he was still locked up while I got out and went back. And so he had those people involved, the Innocent Project. So as even like now, if you look my case up, it basically talks about him. I'm just like an afterthought. So with that afterthought, nobody never ever tried to help me or offer me any help or anything like that. You know, they never apologized for nothing. They just overturned the conviction, exonerated me, and it was like that was it. Even for people in society, nobody never just really even tried to help me then. But up in that time, like I said, I was a registered sex offender, so society really don't care about sex offender at all.
So were you able to resolve that? Were they able to resolve that issue for you?
Which one?
The registering as a sex offender?
Oh, yes. When they had finally exonerated me, I didn't have to register no more. But the police, it's funny that you asked, because when I first got exonerated, the police came looking for me. I never stayed at the address that I gave them. You know, I'm not going to lie. I never stayed there. So when I was finally exonerated, they told me I had to come report to them. And so I told my lawyer, hey, man, the police said they're going to arrest me if I don't come up there. They said they don't care what the court said. I have to come up there and report. So I was like, he was like, well, just go up there. No, he told me don't go up there. That's what he said. He said, don't go up there. Don't worry about it. And I was like, man, I don't want to go to jail for the heck of it until y'all sort all this out. I'm going to go ahead and comply and go up there and talk to him. So I went up there and talked to the police, and I took all my court papers up there with me, and I gave them to them. They took copies of it and copies and copies, and then they finally let me go. Well, 3 months after that, they came over to the address that I had on file to arrest me for failure to register as a sex offender again. They basically was looking for me. So when they came over there to the house, I think it was like about 5 or 6 polices. And my auntie, whose house it was, she called me and said, hey, the police looking for you. And I was like, what they looking for me for? And I ain't did nothing. And so she said, you didn't report or something. You didn't register. So I had to call the police department. And when I called the police department, they put me on hold and put me on hold, and then they finally came back and told me it was a mistake. So they just dropped it and left it alone. They said it was a mistake. They weren't supposed to come out there.
So is anyone working with you now on the damages done? Someone needs to pay for what's happened.
I have a lawyer. His name is Daniel White. He's been trying to work it out with them, but they for some reason they've given him the runaround, and I really don't know what's going on with that. To me, it's still a shame, and I still feel like they're trying to hold me accountable for some reason, or they still trying to punish me, basically. But it's not just me. This is something that they are starting to practice, that even though they exonerate you, they don't want to pay you.
Well, I know there's a lot of lawyers.
I'm not the only one.
I know there's a lot of lawyers right now that would take your case in a minute. So if your lawyer's not doing much, something's not right. Because with all that you went through, you should have had lawyers going after you to work for you.
The law is set up in Texas to where if they fight for your money and they win it, they only get like about $2,000. So a lot of the lawyers don't want to take those type of cases because they feel like it's a waste of their time. I have talked to so many lawyers and talked to them, and all of them basically say the same thing, that there's no money in it for them. That you have to really find a lawyer that's doing it from their heart.
You know, a wrongful conviction, especially what you were wrongfully convicted of, and then to come out and be sent back in because you didn't register for something you did not do, that does not mm-hmm. even make sense. So these lawyers, believe me, there are lawyers that you need to talk to, because that is it's outrageous what they did. No one should have to go through what you went through. No one should have to go through what any wrongfully convicted person has had to go through, especially to go into prison for years and then be exonerated and have to go through this all over again.
Exactly what I'm doing. I mean, I laugh about it now, but I laugh because it keeps me from crying about it, you know, because I know it's so many other people out there that's doing worse than me. Then I just thank God every day. I get on my knees and thank him every day for getting me right here where I am today. Because without him, I'd be still lost. I'd be still that convicted sex offender. And I mean, they had the DNA to clear me and this guy a long time ago. The case happened in 1992. So from 1992 until today, they've been having DNA to clear us, but they never cared about testing it. They knew the woman gave a false name and everything, but they still, for some reason, they wanted to prosecute us. And I believe that they wanted to prosecute the guy that my co-defendant.
Did they ever find out who actually did the crime after you were released?
No, see, that's the sad part about it. She never was raped. She never was raped. The woman, the police basically made her say she was raped. Okay, the story how it all started was, a guy came up to me and he wanted to buy some marijuana, or he wanted some marijuana that I had. And I told him no. And he kept telling me to sell him some marijuana, and I kept telling him no. And he finally, I told him I was going to slap him if he asked me again, because I was getting mad because he was trying to make me sell him some marijuana. And so he went and called the police. And he gave a false name, too. So he called the police and told the police that we was raping the woman. And when the police came there, it just so happened I already had a confrontation with the police earlier that day. About 30 minutes or 30 minutes before that, they arrested us. Maybe an hour. I just had a confrontation with them. Amen. So when that guy called him and said that we was raping a woman, and they got there and they seen that it was us, the woman told them that she was okay, there wasn't nothing going on. So they separated all of us.
So
when they separated all of us, when they separated us, he had two small kids, and the sergeant told the other policemen to go call CPS, which is Child Protective Service. So when they went to talking about calling CPS and taking a kid, that's when the story changed. That's when she went ahead and said, yeah, we sexually assaulted her.
Can you hold on? We're having some interruption here. Is that coming from you or someone else?
Yes,
ma'am. Hold on a second.
Look at that modeling there. Look at that.
Charlie with the black glasses. Mark White. Yeah. With the brown.
Okay, we have another caller, 21053. Can we have your name, please? Okay, they dropped. We're still having, okay, we have some distraction there for a minute.
But it's okay. Okay, so when they had separated us, like I said earlier, she had two small kids with her that had no shirt on, that was barefoot. And here it was like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at midnight. And so when she failed to tell them that we sexually assaulted her, They went to talking about calling CPS to take her kids away. So the only way she could save her kids, she told the police that, yeah, we did assault her. That's how it all started. There never was no rape, there never was no problem. I just met him and her at the same exact time.
And they never took her to the hospital for an exam.
Yes, they did. And they got DNA from her, two male people DNA.
Two?
They did get DNA from her, two. Yes,
wow.
Right, two. But she was a prostitute. And what she told me at night was, when I met her, that her husband just put her outside. Her and the kids. He just put them out. That's why it was so late. Because I was questioning her, hey, why you kids ain't got no shoes on? Why they ain't got no shirt on? And the kids kept talking about they was hungry. So I gave her $5. I don't know if anybody remember when 7-Eleven used to have those hot dogs, $2 for $1, back in 1992. So I went in my pocket, and I gave her $5. I said, hey, man, why don't you go give your kids something to eat, man? And, you know, because she just told her husband to put it out, you know, so I felt sorry for her and them kids. So I gave her $5, and she went to 7-Eleven and bought two hot dogs and a 40-ounce grill with the $5.
Jeez.
And I just looked at her, but I didn't get mad because I gave her the $5. And she did buy the kids hot dogs, so I couldn't get mad, but she bought a 40-ounce with the rest of the money. And this was right before the guy got off the bus, my co-defendant. Because, see, I didn't know him or her. I met both of them at the same time. And so after she came back and drunk her 40, and I'm sitting at the bus stop, because me and my girl just had got into an argument, and I got out the car right there. Just so happened, when me and her got into the argument, I got out the car right there at the bus stop, and I was just staying there because me and her got in an argument about me not knowing how to read. And she jinxed me, and she said, you're going to end up dead or in prison for the rest of your life. And God forgive me. And I ended up going to prison that night. And so when me and her got into the argument, like I said, she put me up. I got out right there at the bus stop. And that's when I met that woman. She came up talking to me, asking for cigarettes and stuff like that. And then after I bought her kids something easy, and I guess I bought her a 40, I guess, the guy got off the bus. And when he got off the bus, I was smoking a marijuana joint. And he was like, man, can I hit that? And I was like, yeah. And he said, you got some more? And I said, yeah. So I gave him some weed, and he gave me some money. And he was telling me that he just got out of prison. So I was like, you just got out of prison, man, for real? So I said, tell me about prison life. That's how me and him started talking. Tell me what happened, man. What happened to you? And so he started telling me he just got out and stuff like that. And she started talking to him. And then he gave her some money to go buy him a beer and bought her a beer, too. So that's how that went. So we was all talking. And there was other people around, too. There was a whole bunch of people. I would say probably about 10 people.
Just for a minute, Jerome, we have the caller calling back, 210. Can you please state your name? Somebody either wants to talk or they want to listen. Okay, so, Jerome, was it possible that it was some kind of a setup or something? That they may have been working together, or were they complete strangers?
Which one?
The man on the bus and the woman.
No, because he went to prison with me.
Okay, so you both went.
Yes, yeah, yes, ma'am. So me and him both basically went to prison for raping her. Me and him both went to prison. So he didn't know her. He didn't know her. Now, I don't know about the other people. I didn't know them. Like I said, it was about 10 or 15 other people out there. And when me and him ran out of smoking weed, when me and him ran out of the weed that we had, we went to another spot. We walked down the street to go buy some more. And that's when we was leaving the place where we bought the weed at, that's when we had the encounter with the police.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And we was on our way back down there to where we just left at.
What are your thoughts about this? Now, you went to prison basically because you were smoking weed, and you ended up getting involved in some kind of game that they were playing. What are your thoughts about this now that weed is actually legalized? What are your thoughts about those that have been in prison as a result of smoking weed, you know, and that some of them are probably still in prison around the country?
I think it's cruel and unusual punishment, to tell you the truth. I respect the law, but I just think it's wrong. But, I think we need to do something about it. I just don't think it's fair because you got some states that you can smoke marijuana, and then some states you can't smoke marijuana. It's like if you cross the line, you can go to jail here, but it's okay here. I think that's wrong.
It really is. This is why I always say this. We live in a country that's so dysfunctional. It's so inconsistent. We have every state, the same problems in every single state, but yet we have different rules, different policies, different everything. And it doesn't even make sense. You know, the whole continent of Africa probably is more stabilized than the United States of America. There's all kinds of continents countries on that continent. And here we have the United States, one continent, in division in every single state. It doesn't make sense.
Well, no, it don't. We're so divided. What got me exonerated might not get you exonerated. And it could be the same charge. Everything could be totally a carbon twin. And just because I got exonerated, they won't exonerate you. With the same evidence in the same situation, we are so divided. We say we united, but we really not united. We really separated by so many different tribes, and it's so many things that separate us that we all for ourselves. I'm gonna tell you the truth. Everybody seems like it's out for themselves. Totally. Don't nobody care about the next human being.
That's why I bring up races and religions. I'll tell you, I feel people need to learn about other religions and other races. They go to these countries for vacations, but yet when these people are representing their countries in the United States, they have to go through all this racism and all this hatred and everything. Now, one of the things we have to realize, and I brought that up about the DNA, it all came from Africa. So people migrated all over. Their skin, their pigmentation is going to change naturally because they're not all in the same location. But we have in this country, and I say this all the time, we have in this country representatives from every single country in the world. And that's why the United States is looked up to. People in this country, our government thinks that everybody's afraid of it. Everybody's not afraid of the government. They respected this country for the representation of every country. And that's why I call it the United States. I don't call it America. It's the United.
Right.
Unfortunately, as you say, and as we all know, there is so much division in this country. This is a blessing that we have. And while people are celebrating the death and resurrection of the Christ Jesus, they'll come out of their churches and they'll come out of their homes and they're going to carry the same hatred that they carried before, the majority of them. And this is why I say it's so important this day of all days to have you on the show, to talk about the wrongful conviction, to talk about the judgment of others, to talk about the lies, deceptions, corruptions, everything that goes on. People judge because of religions, which they shouldn't, because it's the leaders, the religious leaders, that are dividing the people. Because if they all come together, they will know how this world came about and how we all came about under the same umbrella, under the same roof, under the same master. But this is sick when people are wrongfully convicted and there's so much division in this country and every state is divided. It's intentional. We live in a country that's intentionally dividing its people.
That's right. That's how they control them. If they divide us, it's easy to control. I never understood that until I went to prison, because that's how they control the prison, by dividing inmates. And they divide us in cities and races and gangs. And those three things, they control us now, because we are too busy fighting and hating on each other to realize what they're really doing to us. And it's the same concept in society, that we are too busy fighting against and hating each other, that we're too busy doing that to realize what the government is doing to us. You know, and for me, I always tell everybody, and I used to always tell a group of guys that was Muslims in prison, and I went to a lot of their meetings. I did. I really did. But I'm a Christian. And I used to tell the Muslims all the time, I used to tell them, I said, man, I don't knock your religion. I don't knock nobody's religion. Whatever religion that makes you a better person, I'm for that religion. I'm for you. I'm not going to knock nobody's religion. I'm not going to knock what nobody believes in. What you believe in is what you believe in. If it makes you a better person, then I'm happy for you. Just please be happy for me, because I'm a Christian, and it has made me a better person.
You know, we have extremists on both, in any religion. But I have to say, if people really, really understood the Bible, there would be no division between any race, any religion, because it all started just like when Abraham's wife did not believe in what God was telling her, that she would have a son. She ended up giving her slave woman. So Hagar with Ishmael, who makes up the Muslims, and then you have Isaac, whose two sons, Jacob and Esau, they were in strife. Esau was the oldest, Jacob the younger one, with his mother deceived Isaac at his old age, and Esau lost that blessing. He married into his uncle's family. So we have unity right there, but there was so much strife and division because of that. But again, I say, Ishmael and Isaac, they made up with one another years and years later. But the fighting is still going on within the religions. We have on the phone with us 4883. Can you state your name? Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, who is it?
This is Tony from The Great Injustice. How you doing?
Hello. Good. How are you, Anthony? I'm glad you came on. We have Jerome Eubanks on with us as well. Jerome spent years in prison on a wrongful conviction. Anthony Wilson, he is the founder of The Great Injustice. Anthony Wilson also spent years in prison on a wrongful conviction. And I'd like to have you also, Anthony, Tony, if you can talk about your injustice. Jerome just finished with what he was talking about. And then after you talk about yours, I'd like to have you two talk to one another for a few minutes about how you feel about the injustice that was done to both of you.
Okay. Well, my story began where Prince George County Police Department wanted me to tell on some people in regards to some drug activity back in 1990-91, and I was not cooperating. So one of the detectives, Dennis Bad Cop, I called him Bad Cop, but his name is Bad Cop, and he basically told me if I wouldn't help him with his investigation that he would pay two or three people to say it was me, and that's how I ended up becoming convicted of the suspect, coming convicted of the charge for 22 years. I fought to prove my innocence. In 2006, I obtained what they call my discovery files from the police department. But to go back, when I used to request my police files from the county police department, they were telling me that the files were destroyed. And it was only 3 years after my conviction, or the conviction was final. And so every 6 months I would write them, and they would write me and say they checked the warehouse, they checked the property, but my files could not be found. So in 2006, we hired a private investigator, and she ended up obtaining my files. So I'm sitting, you know, in the day room, and legal mail comes around, and they give me my legal mail, and what I get? My discovery files. And when I looked in there, I see why they said my files was destroyed, because in my files, there were five pieces of what they call Brady. And that's why I sit out here today, because of the Brady material that was withheld. And I did a motion called a motion for a new trial based on new discovered Brady material and prosecutor misconduct. When I finally went to court, they didn't want to acknowledge their wrong, so the state's attorney basically gave me a bargain saying, hey, you withdraw your petition with prejudice, we'll let you go. So I had life without parole. I had already done 20-something years, and so my lawyer at the time, who was a public defender, basically said, look, you can go home. The private investigator said, Tony, you can go home. You can fight your case, you know, once you get home. And I said, all right. And so when I got home, I started helping a lot of guys out that were still incarcerated that I felt that were, you know, unjustly incarcerated. And one of the lawyers had told me that he saw my work, and he told me that I needed to get my papers. And I didn't understand what he was talking about at the time, but he was talking about I needed to go back to school and get certified as a paralegal. So I did an application for Howard University paralegal certification course. I had to do, and they had every person had to do a essay to determine who they would accept. And so I got called into the dean's office along with a professor, and they liked my essay on my wrongful conviction, and that's how I got into Howard, graduated, obtained my certification, started my paralegal consultant service called the Great Injustice Paralegal Consultant Services, and our motto was we tip the scales of justice for the innocent and wrongly convicted. And so that's what I've been doing now for almost the last 10 years, is just trying to help others, you know, right their wrongs in the judicial system that is corrupt and unfair.
Now, Tony, you had talked about some of the things that you've been doing, and you said you were focusing more on that than actually being an investigator for the work that you were doing. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you were talking about when we previously interviewed you?
Yes. I got into doing investigative work for several different law firms. And so what I was doing was I was finding witnesses from old 20, 25, 30-year-old murder cases. And so the witnesses that I end up tracking down in those several cases, come to find out the witnesses basically said that the Baltimore City Police Department and the detective who was investigating the case at the time basically was telling them that if they didn't help them, one case, a young lady said that they was going to take her child from her. You know, another case, the young man said that the police basically said that one of the guys in the photo array was the guy. And so all they needed him to do was just to say it was him. And so a lot of the convictions was based on coercion. And so I have a lot of cases that now that are in the state of Maryland that guys are waiting on actual compensation from the state of Maryland because of wrongful convictions. And so I saw a lot of the young kids being shot and killed, being physically or verbally abused by police officers when they were confronted or stopped. And so me and my team with my program, I have a nonprofit called FRESH, and it stands for Fully Restoring Every Son's Hope. And so we created a curriculum called Knowing Your Rights and Engaging in the Political Process. And so what we do now is we go around and we teach kids 11 through 19 how to exercise their Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights when they encounter law enforcement or police officers. And this is in the efforts to stop those confrontations, for those encounters becoming confrontational, whether it be physically, whether it be verbally, or even deadly. And so our team is actually going out to Chicago on the 23rd through the 25th to do a Knowing Your Rights for some youth in Chicago for a nonprofit called Wildebree. And it was coincidental that over the weekend, I don't know if y'all heard, a little 13-year-old kid was shot and killed by a police officer in Chicago over the weekend. So I don't know if y'all heard about that. And so I talked to her this morning, and I told her that she needs to locate the news media and tell them that we're going to come down there so we can bring attention to how to bring these things to light and how we can stop this from happening. And so I'm going to say this, and then, you know, Leon, you can chime in. I tell people to take the badge and the uniform off the person. And who do you have? You have another human being killing another human being.
Exactly.
But they use the badge as a cover-up.
Exactly.
So there's something wrong with the individual. It ain't about the police. They keep saying the police killing people. It ain't police is killing people. It's people killing people. They just got a badge on or a uniform. That's it.
You know, and I think of the George Floyd case with all those people. I've been following that court case, and I see so many people crying, white and black, crying because they felt so helpless because those men in uniform were preventing them from doing anything to help that man. And unfortunately, that young man ended up dying unnecessarily at the hands of, as you say, human beings, not people because of their uniform or the badge, but because of the mentality of the criminal individual that or individuals that did what they did. This is something that people don't realize. They're so influenced, so manipulated by people in law enforcement that they don't realize that they are just human beings as well. And many of them, some of them using their power because they think they can get away with it because they have gotten away with it for so long. And I wanted to say, Tony, also, if at some point in time, if you and Jerome Eubanks can hook up by phone or email or anything to connect, because I think that you can both help one another in a way as well. Jerome, I want you to explain to Anthony once again what happened with you when you first went in and what you didn't know. And I'm sorry, Tony, I just had you on mute and I didn't even realize it.
Okay.
Now I have. Okay, I'm okay. Now, if room. If you can explain to Anthony what it was like for you when you first went in, when you mentioned you couldn't read or write.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, I wrote it in my book, and I think about it all the time. You know, my first experience is, at first I had this old guy in the county. This old man, he was telling me about prison, what the do's and the don'ts and what to expect. And he always told me prison is different from the county jail. He said, you detected in the county. But when you go to prison, it's a different story. And my first time actually going into my cell, it was like, it was unbelievable, you know. It's like I heard voices and things like that. And I come to believe the voices that I heard when I first went in that cell was God. It was the Bible talking to me. And, you know, it was a Bible on the table, and that's all I seen was the Bible, two steel beds, a toilet, a table. That's all I seen. And God knows, I feel like that Bible was talking to me, but I couldn't read. That was the crazy part about it. I couldn't read. And, you know, I started crying and because I knew I was innocent. I didn't rape that woman. I didn't touch that woman. And I was just in a bad state of mind. So I opened up that Bible, and somehow, I don't even know how I did it, but somehow I found John 3:16 in the Bible. I don't even know how I found that page. But I found it. And when I found it, I knew what it was. And I found that scripture. And I already knew the scripture from a kid when I used to go to Sunday school all the time because I wasn't a big Bible person. Well, going to church, I wasn't a big person that went to church all the time. But as a kid, I did. And so I always knew that scripture. And I found it in the Bible. And I, God only knows, I probably said it a million times that night. And the more I as I was saying it, I just followed along in the Bible. Every word that I said, I followed along, and I seen how you spell that word. And that's how I basically taught myself how to read and write. And I could never write anybody to help me, nor could I even go to the law library to help myself because I couldn't read. So I felt like I was just stuck. I was in a bad place. I was just stuck. And all I had was my thoughts and what happened to me and what was going on around me. And,
what I think happens sometimes when Satan means evil for you, God has something in the making, because all of you have gone in one way and come out in a different way. A lot of you have come out knowing a lot, going through a lot while incarcerated, being able to bring awareness, starting your own businesses, writing your own books, many doing their own poetry, many singing, and not realizing their gifts, their talents, their skills until they come out or until they go in. This is one of the things they say is, man can try to bring you down, but there's an inner strength in you that's given by the power above, the highest power above. But, Anthony, the reason why I'd like to see you and Kevin connect is because Kevin was talking about when he came out, to this day, he hasn't gotten justice. There has been nothing that has been done to help him with all the years that he's lost while incarcerated on a wrongful conviction. Whereas he was telling us before you came on that no lawyer is willing to help because they say he's only going to get a couple of thousand out of the deal. I don't know if you have knowledge of anything like that that could help him and yourself as well to be getting something for all those wasted years that you suffered while incarcerated. And I think more people that have been wrongfully convicted need to connect. You really need to connect.
All right, I'm going to tell you a story. Hey, Jerome, I'm going to tell you a story. I won't forget your name because my middle name is actually Jerome, so I get called Rome a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, you
yeah,
know my first name is Ronald, man. You know my first name is Ronald. I hated that name. Huh?
Okay. So your middle name Jerome, too?
Yeah, that's, I love that name, man. That's why I use it. Jerome.
I used to get joked all the time. Ooh, Rome's in the house, but.
I got them too, man. Believe me.
I want to interject onto what Leona said about I've been compensated. So I'm going to tell you how I've been compensated, even though it hasn't been monetarily, right? I remember the person who had my case. She asked me one day when we were sitting out in the lobby of the courtroom waiting on a case, and she said, Mr. Wilson, she said, are you bitter? And I said, I'm going to show you how bitter I am by how many people I helped get out of prison. And so that, and she just shook her head like, okay. And so she used to see me in the courtroom. Every time she'd come in there, she'd look, she'd say, oh, you with this case too? I'd be like, yeah, no more in this case. And so that was the thing of seeing these guys come home. You have no idea, Leona and Jerome, how many people through the grace of God that I've assisted getting home and getting their freedom. And these guys call me all the time, and they say, thank you, man. I appreciate you, man, going out to find these witnesses. And I thank you for coming to court and being speaking on my behalf, this and that. And I said, look, I told the prosecutor this one time. I said, I'm not saying everybody is innocent like me and Jerome are, but what I'm saying is this right here. If it can happen to us, it can happen to anybody. That's the only reason why I seek justice in case, you know, and that's what I told her. She understood. She understood, you know, what I said. But as far as that, me and Jerome will get together, you know, after the show, and we'll talk. The one thing I know about this corrupt system is that they never want to right their wrong, you know. And I think Leona asked me on the show, she said, how can we, because I do criminal justice reform. I'm an advocate now. And Leona asked me last show, she said, Anthony, how can we change the system? And I told her it starts with the judges, the prosecutors, and the lawyers.
Absolutely.
That's
what. Yeah. Right on. Really.
You know, that's why I think it's so important for you, Anthony, for Jerome, for others who have learned what it's all about, who have been sharing what it's all about. And again, what you just said, Tony, is awesome because you have helped a lot of people. You have done something with that experience that you went through. And you not only have helped a lot of people, but both of you being on the show right now is bringing awareness to people in the audience. You know, we have people listening that I've been trying to get to say their name. They're not saying anything. They just want to what you said. But this is the only way to make, when I think about the being, the innocent person that was hanging on that cross or that stake or whatever they want to call it, because of all mankind, because of all the mistakes that were made by all of us, not just the few. And the mistake that was made with you and with Jerome and others that were wrongfully convicted, there's a population out there who couldn't wait to see you go into prison, who couldn't wait to see men put to death or women put to death, who couldn't wait to be judging. Those people there, they have to go before their maker. You know, they are the ones that are real sinners. And who holds them accountable? No one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Nobody cares. Society don't care. How can you hold them accountable when society don't care within themselves?
Really? We have some ladies here that haven't said anything. You want to say something to add to this? Either Christine or you didn't say your name, the other one? Is she with you, Jerome?
Who is it?
I heard what Tony was saying, and I was just wondering if they wanted to say anything as well.
Can you hear me?
I don't know.
Yes, we can.
Oh, hi, Leona. Thank you for that. My name is Alicia, and I actually know Jerome. That I got to know him quite recently. And hi, Jerome. And hi, everybody. So one of the things that happened, just to kind of clarify with Jerome, as I got to know him recently, Texas has, you know, a law where once you are exonerated, of course, you can file for compensation. And being that Texas has the most wrongful convictions, they pay the highest, which would be $80,000 a year for every year you've been incarcerated. And what we found out with Jerome's case is his attorney, as he said, that was working on it, started the writ. And what initially happened was the court, the trial court, refused to do the order of dismissal. Now, the DA did it, but the trial court refused. So then we kind of fast forward, and the new attorney that he had went to speak with him. Well, at this time, it was a 3-year statute of limitations that had been exhausted. He went back to try to speak to the DA, who had given the order of dismissal, and they were hands-off. So what's happened with Jerome is the statute of limitations have essentially just expired. And so we're really looking forward to him speaking with Anthony and everything. And I just want to say that I appreciate this, you know, this talk and everything since I've been listening in the last month. The guests are great. It's, you know, you have to be raw. And I'm not incarcerated. My son is, but it's led me to do other things. You know, listening to Tony, you know, this led me to go back to school because of the situation that I'm involved with. And I'm actually getting my master's in legal studies and working on my paralegal certification. So it affects not only those who've been, you know, who've been victimized as your guests, but also, you know, the families who want to make a difference in your right. Society is so easy to judge, and they want to see somebody just burned at the stake. And even after these guys have been exonerated or have been proven to be innocent, there's still people that close the doors. And the worst part of it is our own government, you know, who implements these laws. So again, like I think it was Tony was saying, it is. It takes reforming, you know, the prosecutors, the courts, you know, the judges, the investigators. It's a lot of that. So I really appreciate this, and I hope that the callers out there and listeners will do more to go out and make their voice heard and change this, because it's true that it can happen to anyone, and it will.
I want to thank you for that, Bishop, because you know what, you're right. Great.
Thank you.
I want to thank you because, you know, what you were saying, and I want to congratulate you, too, for taking this and going with this to go back to school and to do what you're doing. We need more people like yourselves, and hopefully the audience has gotten something from this, because a lot of us seem to judge, or we seem to think everybody in prison is nothing but a hardcore criminal. This is the way the prison officials try to make the prisoners feel. They're called animals all the time. They're made to feel like animals. And they're not even called by name, but numbers. So it's things like this that is so detrimental to have people, when they come out, wrongfully convicted or not, to talk about what they've experienced and to talk about what they got from it and to talk about how they overcame the injustices.
Absolutely. Thank you. And my hat's off again to yourself and all your guests. And I'm hoping that listeners will become active and make it a change, because we can make a change. We just have to get involved.
That's right.
You know, as Tony was saying, or Jerome was, one of them was saying, a lot of times people just, I mean, they just don't, they don't get involved for one thing. And a lot of times people look at people in uniforms as though they're some kind of a god. We were talking about God today, and it wasn't anyone in uniform. As a matter of fact, someone that gave his life for the mistakes of all mankind, he came into this world. He could have been anything he wanted to, but what did he do? He walked around in sandals without a place to lay his head. He came down associated with the lowest of low. And we have people in society that think they're above all this, and they're going to be the judge, jury, and what, prosecutor? someone starts, please.
Well, Leona, I just want to chime in real quick. I was telling someone before that it doesn't affect you until it affects you, if you understand
right.
what I just said.
Yes,
so most people don't understand me and Jerome's hurt and our pain and our struggle until it affects them, someone in their family, one that they know. And so I use that all the time. I did it on the last show I did. And I tell people all the time, it doesn't affect you until it affects you.
That's right.
That's the truth.
That's true.
And it can strike anyone anywhere at any time.
It really can. And it's the same people don't believe it can, though. People feel like they're immune to it because they in certain type of groups or they live here or they got this much money. And boy, God knows when it hit, it hit. And it destroys the whole family when it hits. A lot of people don't realize that, but it takes a toll on the mother, the kids, the wife, the father, grandparents. It takes a toll on the whole family because the whole family try to come to the rescue, which they should.
Yes.
And along with them coming to the rescue, they give everything that they got. They give their life savings. They put their homes up. For what? Because the state, the government, the justice system, whoever you want to blame, they want to possess it. They want to own it. They want the money.
You know, a lot of people talk about believing in God, but, you know, they don't really believe in him. They don't believe he's really coming. They have this thing in their mind that there is God, that he's coming, but they continue to do what they're doing. And, you know, in the Bible, in the book of 2 Peter chapter 3, it talks about these type of people. How they think that it hasn't happened since the flood. Nothing's going to happen. It's been thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Nothing's going to happen. But it reminds them that the flood did happen. And while Noah was building that ark, everybody was laughing at him because they didn't think there was going to be a flood because there was no rain at the time. Everything came up from the ground. But it happened. And when it happened, it was too late for them to change their minds, their attitudes. So they were all left to drown in that flood. That's the same way it's going to be here because it says in the book of Genesis, it says God promised everyone it would not be like a flood again, and that's why we see a rainbow to remind us it will never be a flood, but it says by fire. We're living in a time now where there's nuclear weapons, where there's fires all over the place, there's all kinds of stuff. People need to get it together because if they say they believe in God, they better believe that God is going to be judging them. And we see it all around us right now in the change of the weather, in the change of the
right.
division going on in the world. We see it in the climate. We see it in the attitudes of people. Mass incarceration in the United States, the only country in the whole wide world that has mass incarceration, and they just keep putting them in like cattle because it's become prisons for profit. These people better wake up.
You know, I want to add something on to that. When you said about the churches, you know, I don't know about Tony, but I got out, and like I said, I stress it all the time. I was a registered sex offender for 12 years. When I first got out of prison, I went to the biggest church that was in Dallas, Texas, because I heard about it. I'm not going to say the name, but I heard about it everywhere in prison. I heard about this church everywhere. And one of the first things I did when I got out of prison, I went to this church and I cried and I got on my knees and I told these people I was innocent, that I was being crucified. Could they help me? Could they pray for me? And they prayed for me that one moment. And then the next Sunday I went back to that church. Everybody scattered for me because they knew I was a registered sex offender.
You see how people judge without knowing the truth? We have a media. We have a media outlets that are biased. We have people out there in the courts that are lying, that are bringing in false witnesses, that are playing with evidence, that are trying their just to win a case. They don't care if the person goes to a prison for a wrongful conviction, as long as they win their cases. We have corrupt judges that are taking bribes. I know this has happened even in Pennsylvania with these adolescents, the juveniles that were being sentenced to prison. A judge was taking all kinds of bribes. They caught up with that person. But we have all this corruption in this country, all the deception and lies and everything. And then people are going to scatter from you, someone that was in a church asking and begging for help.
That's all I wanted was somebody to believe and help me. I just wanted them to listen to me. I just wanted to find somebody that believed in me. And that's why I went to that church. I was just assured that these people of God would believe me. They would help me. They would hug me. They would cry with me. And they would understand me. But they didn't. You know who I found it with? I had to go back to the ghetto, the trailer park, the dope fiends. Them the people that believed in me.
You know,
God knows me. I'm telling the truth. Those are the only people that believed that when I told them I was innocent, they believed in me. And I respect them people so much. I don't call them dope fiends. I don't call them people that. I respect everybody because we are creations of God. God made us. God created us. And we are all the same.
At the end of the day,
we are all the same.
We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. We have an epidemic of addictions. You know, and people in politics think the only solution is to throw them in prison and throw away the key. One of the things that I have to say this, and I say it with all sincerity, these people should not be in prison. First of all, a lot of people who are addicted are either addicted because they got addicted to pain medication that the doctors gave because of the pain they were going through, or a lot of them because they were trying to block out something that happened to them in their lifetime, something traumatic that happened, and that's why we have people that are addicted. Now, they shouldn't be in prison. They should be replacing these prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities that can actually work. As you said before, Jerome, these people are putting people in prison, and they're trying to get them to divide. They're trying to divide them by putting them in places they should not be, with people they should not be with.
Right. They do it all the time. And society allowed it to happen because it's hard to believe that society don't know what's going on. And we like to say that people don't know what's going on behind the prison wall. I don't believe that. I believe everybody knows. Don't nobody care. And we need to start calling it for what it is. People don't care because it's self-evident what's going on behind prison walls. It's self-evident what's going on in the courtroom. Everybody know they don't kill innocent people before. They know that. They have executed probably a bunch of innocent people. Because if you go back through the hands of time, a lot of old people were innocent. They were accusing them of witchcraft and this or this or that, and they was hanging them and executing them. They still doing this today. They're just covering it all up, making it look good, and they say, hey, no, they guilty. Let's kill them. And we're living in a real life of Game of Thrones. But it's real life. Everybody wants to devour everybody. We do not love one another like we should. We don't. We don't throw God out the picture. Don't nobody care about nobody. And we don't realize that's what's going to make this a better place if we start loving each other. If we start giving a helping hand to somebody that needs help, somebody that needs a job, give them a job. Who cares if they just got out of prison?
Exactly.
Who cares? Give them a job. Give them an opportunity to take care of their family.
You know what I think about all the time? It makes me sick. Is everybody's heard of Salem, Massachusetts? They celebrate every year in Salem, Massachusetts, about the witches that were burned alive and that were killed. Today, those witches they're not considered witches anymore. They're considered people there's a lot of people in cults and things like that. But these innocent people that were killed in Salem, Massachusetts, and they celebrate every year. They make a big celebration and make all kinds of money when tourists come to see it. You know, that's the people that do these kind of things are sick. They get great pleasure out of seeing people suffering, whether they be in prison or whether they be in jails or whether they be on the streets or whether they be whether it be in the hospitals or even nursing homes. These people are sick. The ones on the street getting killed and beaten and shot in the back. And these people, a lot of them are getting away with it because they have uniforms.
That's right. Society accepts it.
People.
As long as society accepts it, will continuously go on.
Exactly.
Society has to put a stop to it. That's not we. You know, I agree with y'all when y'all say that we need to change the politicians. I mean, the judges and the prosecutors. That's self-evident. That's true all up and down. But I'm gonna tell you, you need to start with society first. I promise you. You have to change the perception of how society look at the justice system. And once you change the perception of how society look at the justice system, then you can change those judges and those prosecutors because they'll be different people. But right now, society, all they care about is locking people up and throwing away the key.
We have people in society who are too afraid to be their own person and make up their own mind.
That's true.
Look, even in politics now, we got two parties, okay? One party, you saw what happened. They were afraid to go up against their others, even though they know there was a lot of wrongdoing. They were afraid to go up against it to make the right decision because of this. Maybe it's because of the power that they crave, the power they crave or the wealth that they crave or whatever it is. These are very insecure people. When you're so insecure that you can't think for yourself, you can't be independent of what your peers are thinking or wanting to have happen, that's a sickness. I say it all the time. I don't care what people think about me. I'm going to tell it like it is. But these people in power, they are so insecure that they cannot make a decision when someone comes in as wrong. They stand by those who are wrong so they don't lose friends or power or greed or whatever. That's sad.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But you know that's about money. I'm not gonna tell you they were scared of that man or scared of a certain leader. I believe it was about money. It's the same thing. They know they locking up innocent people. If they let all this corruption go on right in front of them, and now one of them stand up to say something about it, it's the same thing with the justice system. Everybody knows that they are locking up innocent men and women all the time. But it's making them money. It's about the economy rolling. So they close their eyes to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I promise you, they weren't scared of the men. They weren't scared of them. But it's making them too much money. They were getting what they wanted. It was a big trade-off.
I don't say they were afraid of the leader, the nation's leader. I think they, you know what it was with that? They appreciated his strength. I think they appreciated the fact that he was like guiding. This is a man that didn't care about what anybody said, even though he was wrong.
That's right.
He was a strong leader.
Care.
Even
That's
our
right.
leader
he
today
was.
That we have today, he's weak. He might be trying to do the right thing, but he's not a assertive. He's not aggressive. He's weak in what he's doing. He needs to be more strong. He needs to have that fatherly or leadership role.
Right. I mean, for me, I just like the people that do right by people. That's all I'm like. They can be strong. They can be weak. They can be crazy if you want to say that. But if they have a heart and they love people, then I love them. I'm going to tell you the truth because I think we need more love. I'm just telling you how I honestly feel in my heart that we need more love and compassion in this world. We really do. And the only type of love and compassion it's going to come from is from God. That's the type of love and compassion we need. The same as when Jesus walked this earth, and he was blessing us every day and every minute of our life with his presence. That's what we need today. And we don't have that.
No. You know what else?
We don't have it.
You know what?
We don't have
what
it
else
nowhere.
We have a pandemic in this country and around the world right now. These prisoners are being kept in their cells 22 hours a day or more. No priest, no pastor, no imam, no rabbi, no one going in to even teach them or pray for them or pray with them. Why is that not? I mean, if there's lawyers, some lawyers can still go in. People are still going into the prison to do whatever they have to do, work or whatever. Then there should be religious leaders still going in, even if they just meet with a few at a time. But somebody should be in there to let them know that they have not been forgotten by their God.
Right. That's funny because a lot of that comes from they really be trying to protect the boys, and it might sound crazy, but that's what they really trying to do. They don't care about the inmates. But I know Tony noticed, like, if a guard come in that prison with a cold, it's going to spread through the whole unit like a wildfire. It won't be no stopping it, I promise you. It don't take number one person to come in with that cold or the flu, and it don't spread it through the whole unit.
Jerome.
Well, that's what's happening already. See, I'm just listening, right? I don't do
right.
To be honest with you, I'm not a man of talk, man. We already know what's going on. We got to just move
right.
Action,
yeah, we know.
Right?
And
right. So I get calls all the time from all the prisons from all in the state of Maryland. They saying now that God's coming in shaking them down more than ever. Why are these guys going in these guys' cells and shaking them down? Because they're the only ones that can bring that virus inside the jail.
That's
and
right.
They
That's
call
right.
me saying, hey, they said, man, we ain't been shook down this much since we've been locked up. And I say, because they're trying to get you sick. They're trying to bring the virus into you. You know, and they know that you only get limited, if not none, no medical treatment at all. And Jerome been in there. The one
right.
thing I learned about this system, they don't care. And the thing about it
care.
Is a remedy for, I don't know if Jerome went through this, but in Maryland, the remedy for everything, you can get your head chopped off, you can have a broken leg, you can have a heart murmur, all that. They will want to give you Motrin. That's all they give you is Motrin. I don't think he went through that, but that's
what
they said for.
They gave us answers. They gave us answers. Y'all got motion, we got answers, man. Asking for everything. No matter what it is. Asking.
No matter what it is, Fiona, they want to give you aspirin or motion. And I just want to interject on two things. Jerome, I want to interject on two things Juliana was talking about. And I'm what they call awakened, right? So I don't know if you know what that means. I'm awakened.
Yeah,
I already see what it. I see what it is. You know, I don't see
right.
what people see it in front of them. I see what's behind the scenes.
Right.
In this world, it's not about good. You know what I'm saying? The world is about evil. If you look at the news, everything is about tragedy. And you might hear the news say, "Well, today we have some good news for a change." But everything else is about war, killing, anxiety.
Yeah.
Sickness, somebody died. That's what it's about. That's
yeah.
what the world's about.
Right.
It's about that. It's no news. The world don't want to hear no good news. You know what I'm saying? And so
right.
that's why
that's
we come
true.
Up to the forces be. That's why when you got people like me, Juliana, that's out here trying to fight for a cause, we come up with a lot of resistance because the people are the okay, I'm going to give you this right here to give you a better understanding. 90% of the people that I done worked with, lawyers, private clients, said, "Tony, you need to go to law school and become a lawyer." So I started pursuing the career to become a lawyer. So I started sending my transcripts to different schools to see what I needed and things of that nature. And then as I started working with attorneys, it didn't fit well with me because I found that you gotta basically not have integrity. So
right.
in the criminal field, you know, your integrity has to be not non-existent. So I'm a man of integrity. So I told the attorneys I can't go to law school because it'll go against who I am. And then my people said, "Well, Tony, you can change, man. You can make this place a better place." And I said, "Let me tell you something about this world." I said, "If you watch any movie that had Tom Cruise in it, Morgan Freeman." Denzel Washington, anytime they went against the powers that be, what were they? They became targets. They were trying to be ousted because you was going against the status quo. I said, remember Walking Tall. Walking Tall went into a town and found out they was corrupt. He a white man in a white town, and he was trying to kill him. And he was one of them. But you all get the power of their feet. And I, when I explain that, then people understand what I'm saying to them. I said, let me be what they call the hidden figure, meaning I'm making changes, but they don't see me coming. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. Uh-huh. So the time they knew, all these guys that are home, they don't know I was the one that did the investigative work. They don't know I'm the one that assisted the attorney because I'm the hidden figure.
Yep. Exactly.
There you go.
Never let them see you coming.
Yeah.
That's right. I agree with that to the top fully. Never let right hand know what left hand doing.
And that's what they've done with us throughout the years, you know, and people are now starting to wake up. And I hope people out there start waking up to know the injustices going on, not from those that are incarcerating, but from those that are overseeing. And like you say, Tony, it's time not for talk, but for action. There's a lot of things going on around the country for prison reform, for parole reform, you know, and all of these things. And that has to go along with the prison reform, the parole reform, because we have people that are on the board of the parole board who are siding with the DOC and not even questioning the incarcerated individuals that they are to judge. When a DOC, when they say that a prisoner has not done anything while they've been incarcerated, has not done anything during that time, they need to find out from the incarcerated individual why. Because prison officials have deprived prisoners of all of those things, of work programs, of educational programs. They've actually deprived them. A lot of prisoners that have filed lawsuits against the department or the officials have gone so far with that lawsuit, they have been thrown in solitary confinement while the prison officials will file motions with the courts to have their case dismissed. Once the case is dismissed, then they will let those individuals out of the hole. They will let
all right, those. So let me explain. I got you. Believe me, I hear all the stories. So I'm gonna tell you something about parole, right? A lot of what you said is all of it's true. So this is what I found out doing my own research and investigation, that a lot of times when the individuals would go up for parole, they would not have anything in their package that consisted of them doing rehabilitative programs. So the parole commissioner said, well, what have you been doing the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years? And the guy or the woman would say, well, I did this, did that. They said, well, it's not in your files. That falls on the case management, because the case management supposed to put you in what they call a matrix to see that you do certain things while you're in, so when you go up for parole, those requirements are met. So then you get a better chance at being paroled when you go up. However, what I did was when I found out that was happening, a lot of people don't know this, well, in the state of Maryland, you're entitled to what they call a pre-parole hearing, meaning that your family can meet with the commissioner and talk to them about what they will consider, what are the factors that go into play, how influential is the family impact, you know, statements. But this is also what I have done. I create a parole package, and that parole package has everything that the client needs in there for the parole commissioner's consideration. So when you go to that hearing, you say, hey, this is everything we want placed in this guy's package or this young lady's package. So when he does or she does go for parole, nothing won't be missing. So when they get that, I do it all the time, but for one particular individual I did that for, he ended up going up for parole. They gave him what they call a delayed release and sent him to pre-release for work release. And he said the one thing that the parole commissioner mentioned when they considered him was, hey, we saw that your family came up and they placed a lot of stuff in your files to show us the support that you had as far as for family, job, you had a place to live, and things of that nature. So it gave them a better understanding that if they parole this person, his recidivism rate would be lessened because he had that outside support. But when you go for parole and they see that there's nothing in your files, they may say, well, we paroled this person. We don't know if they got family or what they're going to do when they get home or any of that. So you got to make your chances better. So that's what I do down here in Maryland. I do what they call parole packages, and I have families and the friends meet with the commissioners prior to the person going up for their parole hearing.
I'd like to ask you, Tony, do you ever go into the school, the universities, the community colleges and the universities to talk about some of these things to the students?
I was doing it for Georgetown, George Washington. I did a few of those students that was graduating. And one of the things that I asked those students, what is the most important thing in a criminal case? And a lot of them didn't know. And I told them, investigation. Like Jerome, if Jerome's case was thoroughly investigated, he probably would have never did the time for the wrongful conviction. If my case was thoroughly investigated, all that Brady material would have been brought out, and they would have known I wasn't the one that did the crime. So the thing is, most lawyers don't investigate.
They don't.
And they don't ask questions. I know somebody that's right now, there's a lawyer that's working on his post-conviction. The lawyer sent him a few letters here and there, but to this day has not actually gone over anything, hasn't even met with the client, you know, and it's all been through mail, and it's been through three emails, and not one question has been asked about any of the trial transcripts or anything like that. It's sad, but
well,
these
I'm gonna
are
tell you about, Leona, post-convictions are one of the hardest motions to win, right? I'm not saying they can't be won, but they're one of the hardest. And the reason why is because the post-conviction is something that judges rule on that usually is outside of the record, right? When you do what they call a direct appeal is what's in the record, meaning your lawyer objected to certain things, filed certain motions that they felt may have been ruled against them wrongfully, and then they can appeal it, ask an appellate court to re-rule the judge's lower court decision and seeing whether that particular ruling prejudiced the client or was it a wrongful decision by them. When you do a post-conviction, it's a collateral attack. So you basically attack, in most cases, there's two main issues that are raised in post-conviction, ineffective for counsel or prosecutor misconduct. Sometimes you have structural errors which deal with instructions. And so when you got that, most times post-conviction courts don't want to overturn the decision because it's inside their own arena, meaning they're going to overturn one of their colleagues' convictions. You get what I'm saying? And they don't want to do that.
That's right.
Oh, okay. I never thought of that. That's it. Difficult.
Yeah, you got a judge that saw a case, and you colleagues, y'all have lunch together, and now you got a post-conviction in front of you where he sat and presided over the trial, and now you got a quandary where you said, Willie wasn't right. You should have never did that, or the lawyer should have. You know, you should have gave that instructions when the lawyer asked you to request it. And man, but I'm going to say that it was harmless error. You know, it really didn't affect the outcome of the trial. So that's how they get over that. But then when it goes to the higher court, then the court of special appeals say, oh, nah, that client or that defendant should have been entitled to that instruction because the lawyer asked for it. So it wasn't prejudice because it. Right, so, you know, I can go into all that. You know, that's what I do when I go to those schools and talk to those law students who are graduating. I talk to them about those particular things, about how prejudice is shown, how Strickland versus Washington prejudice and deficiency prone is shown. And I was explaining that to a guy the other day about how you got to show prejudice. And I was explaining to him about his lawyer failed to cross-examine a witness about a particular material fact. And he said, well, how is it prejudice? I said, because you're looking at your confrontational clause under the Sixth Amendment that you didn't get the right to confront your accuser, meaning you didn't cross-examine him properly because your lawyer failed to bring up this material fact that could have created some doubt to that person's credibility, you know, or their veracity when they were testifying. And if that was brought into question, then the jury could have had reasonable doubt as to their
testimony, then that creates confidence to find you not guilty. You know, so.
See, you know what, you need to teach more than the law students. The more I listen to you, Tony, you need to teach a lot of the lawyers too, because what you're talking about is something a very experienced attorney would be saying, and I have seen less attorneys talking that way as far as all these other things that they need to bring out, including asking questions.
Really? Well, that's why they wanted me to go to law school, Leona, but I just couldn't become a liar. I mean, a lawyer. So my bad. I apologize. I hope you heard that, Jerome.
Yeah, man, I heard you, bro. Believe me, I heard you. You said
about
it.
No, that's the sad thing about it.
That's real stuff, man.
That's the sad thing about it. We don't have enough good ones out there. The ones that are doing, some paralegals, they're doing a better job than a lot of the lawyers are doing. We have a lot of lawyers, too, that are biased. We really do. We have a lot of lawyers.
But like you were saying, they all friends and all that. They go to parties. They kick it together. He said the right thing. They're not going to overturn each other's cases.
I recently learned one lawyer actually has a brother or a nephew working for the police department, and they keep these things secret sometimes, and I sometimes wonder, you know, where all the money that these families are paying out, putting out there for lawyers who are actually doing the job for the other side and not for the client that they're supposed to be representing.
So that's what paralegals do. Like, when I finish a case, I take all my findings. I do what they call a memorandum of facts and a synopsis of the case, and I give the lawyer everything I found during my investigation, and then I tell the lawyer, it's up to you to effectively present that to the judge or the appellate court to persuade them that your argument and your issue that you're raising requires the relief or the reversal that you requesting for the client, you know. I'm gonna tell you something that happened with me about a couple of days ago. I had did a guy's case some years ago, and it was dealing with DNA, dealing with like Jerome with some DNA. And so they got down here, they got this thing that a lot of guys don't know, that you can request evidence that they said had obtained that had some type of forensic or anything that was on it. Polygold, whatever, you can ask for the court to have it tested. So I did the motion for the guy, you know, and forgot about it. He called me 3 or 4 days ago and said, hey, Mr. Wilson, guess what? He said, the court gave me a new trial on that motion you filed. I said, what? He said, yeah, man, I just want to tell you thank you, man. He said they did testing on all the clothes and everything, and none of my DNA was on it.
Wow.
I said, man, I'm just happy. And that, I forgot about the guy's case. I did it years ago. But it's so many things I want to talk about. That's why I'm getting into the criminal justice reform and public speaking, because I want to talk about the cases that I've seen that lawyers drop the ball on cases where there was evidence showed the person didn't commit the crime, but because they wanted to move up in the ranks, they just let that fall through the wayside and then let somebody's life go into shambles because they want to move up through the ranks. And so that's what I was telling one of the classes I did about making collars. You have police who are human beings who will put you away for the rest of your life knowing you didn't do it, just so they can satisfy their criteria so they can move up and get into the position of lieutenant, captain, whatever they want to become. And now you in jail, and then there's no repercussions behind their actions, but you the one that faced all the hurt and the pain by being incarcerated. You lost your family, your wife, whoever you had. You didn't raise your kids if you was gone. And so it's like what y'all was saying earlier, people just don't care, you know. But, you know, I feel my thing is, I'm not bitter. I'm going to tell you like this. I'm going to tell everybody in the audience, everybody listening to you, I'm not bitter, not one bit. You know why? Because if I go down the road and I write down everybody I help get out, y'all would be amazed how many people are right now in society that had life, double life, life without parole, triple life, that are home right now because of God first and then me. And they're home, and these people call me, man, look what you need, anything. No, I'm good. Just live your life. This all I, anybody I help get home through the grace of God, I tell them, live your life. That's your payment to me. Don't go back.
Sure.
And I'm good.
Yes.
All right, and I don't know if you know the story. I don't know if y'all know the story of Joseph, but I think I told you on the last time, I'm the Joseph story. I got the three P's, and I went to Rome. Yeah, Jerome, I want you to remember this. My three P's, you know the story of Joseph. I'm Joseph's story. I had to go to prison to be prepared for my purpose. Those are my three P's. I went to prison to be prepared for my purpose. And so that's what I'm out here doing. And Leona spoke on it earlier about we went through so much, but there's a purpose and a reason why we went through what we went through. And we're trying to figure out why we had to go through this. Look at the word of God. Everybody God used went through something that they didn't want to go through. Built up that courage to get the mission that God wanted completed done. And that's what we out here doing.
And I think you guys are heroes, not, you know, what they say, you come out and you have that name, that labeled name, but when you come out and talk about all the things you went through on a wrongful conviction and then came out and did all the good that you did, you are our heroes. You are our heroes. I wanted to ask both of you if you can just give the audience your contact information, your website, your emails, or whatever, in case they want to respond in any way.
Okay. I got a book out called Guilty Until Proven Innocent, When a Woman Cries Rape, the Rona Eubanks Life Story. And they can either just find me on Facebook, Guilty Until Proven Innocent, or Jerome Eubanks, either one, or Smooth J, 123.45@iCloud.com.
Okay, well, I'm the Great Injustice, THEGREATINJUSTICE. You can find me on Facebook. All you got to do is put the Great Injustice in your search engine. You can find me on my website, thegreatinjustice.com. Also, I haven't finished my book yet, Jerome, but I'm writing two books, and I'll give you the titles of them, but I'm not going to give you the premise of them. One of the books is called The Great Injustice, Business as Usual. The other book is called A Felon Freed Me, which will discuss the cases that I worked on and how I came out of a situation where they didn't want to right their wrong, but I end up righting the wrong by helping others prove their innocence. All right?
Right. That's what's up. I like that.
And I want to say to the audience, you can find them both. You can find Jerome Eubanks, Guilty Until Proven Innocent on the internet just by typing that in. And you can find Anthony Wilson on the internet just by typing in Anthony Wilson, The Great Injustice. And they have given you their contact information. And I just listened to you guys, and I want to thank you both for being on, for telling your stories, and for the encouragement that you have been giving so many people. I want the audience to realize that these men are not on this show just to talk about their situations. They're on their shows, on the show, to encourage you, the audience, all of you, to start thinking about why we have mass incarceration in the United States, to think about how you can help. They're giving you their contact information. If you really want to do something to make things right, contact them. Ask them how they can help, how you can help them, and how you can work with them to bring about justice in this country. That's all you have to do. They will tell you how to do it. Look up on the internet. Look up your legislative members in your state. Call them. Tell them that you want to know who you can talk to about prison reform, about criminal justice reform, about making things right. Today's the day when we are all celebrating. People all over the world are celebrating the death and resurrection of an innocent man. We have innocent, right now, we have two innocent men on this show talking about what happened to them, but yet talking about the injustices. They rose from the dead as well. They rose from the injustice that was inflicted upon them, and they rose to help others, to prevent others from being afflicted, to prevent others from going through that. So contact them. Anthony Wilson, Jerome Eubanks, contact them and ask them how you can help them to make it better for others. Go on Facebook. There's all kinds of groups on Facebook regarding prisons, regarding parents of prisoners, regarding all of these issues that need to be addressed in this country. We have been interviewing on this radio show every Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands. We've interviewed Franz Kurz from Germany. Politicians have gone over to Norway to find out what their successful story is. Start listening. Start looking. Because we find that this is the only country in the world with mass incarcerations. This country is up there, high up there, with a few other countries as having the highest human rights violations. Changes need to be done. And these men are on this show to tell you this story and to tell you how you can change it. So I want both of you, as a matter of fact, Christine, I haven't heard from you yet. Is there anything you want to add to this? Is Christine still on? She may have gotten off.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm still here.
Is there anything you want to say on behalf of, even on behalf of Lawrence? He's not here today. He's traveling. But Lawrence has the Legacy Program on Facebook that people can look up. And Christine, do you have anything you want to say on that?
No, he does have the Legacy Program. He's also going to have another website that I'm working on. We should be launching that this week coming up. So you can also get in contact with him on his website. We will have a set date for that, so that way you can look up all his information, any questions, any type of help that you need. You can always click on the links that will be provided, so that way you can get the help that you're needing for your loved ones.
Thank you, Christine. I want to say with Lawrence Drank, also known as Sparky Lee, Lawrence was a young man that from the time he was 9 years old went from prison to a former foster home over 65 foster before he actually ended up going to prison. He served 22 years. He came out, and then he ended up starting the Legacy Project, the Legacy Program, and he's working on so many other things right now to try to get his nonprofit going. But these are some of the things I just want you to know. Lawrence Drank, I'm going to tell his story because he's not here. He has told it before. But Lawrence Drank, from the age of 9, was placed in foster home after foster home, over 25 foster homes. He even robbed from a church. And when he came out, the very pastor, the very being that was running that church, had Lawrence with him. And Lawrence is now a minister himself. So these are things happen and people can change. We want to make sure that everybody knows. People can change. People make mistakes. They serve many years in prison. So I want everyone to just realize that these are changes that you can make as well. Changes to help those who have made their mistakes, who have paid their dues, who are not only out now, but those that are still in and that are depending on somebody out there, someone that has that godly way about them to help them. And there's been a lot of people that have been in prison for 25 years and more who deserve to be out now. 25 years is a long time. As I started to say, I've been interviewing people from other countries who have been on the show to talk about the comparisons between the prisons over in the other countries compared to the prisons of the United States. We have mass incarceration. They don't. They have very low to no recidivism rate. We have a very high recidivism rate. They over there have really good programs, educational programs, medical programs. They have a lot of good things that we don't have in this country. When people are sent to prison in this country, they are treated so badly that those who are fortunate enough to come out have come out with all kinds of problems. We have two men on this show that were fortunate enough to come out without having to deal with serious mental illnesses, but with the determination and motivation to let you, the audience, know what's going on inside. And as one of them said, there should be no one that says they don't know what's going on inside, because most people do. We've had a high rate of suicides in the prisons across this country. We've had a lot of people who have committed suicide. We have a lot of people who were alleged to have committed suicide where we know who really did it. So just because someone is in uniform does not mean that they're above God. People have to realize they are human beings too. And we see it right now with what's going on with the George Floyd case and with so many others who have been shot in the back. No one can be going after anybody to attack them if they're running from that person. So I want to, for you, for Jerome and Anthony, we have 10 minutes left. Do you want to give last-minute feedback or say anything these last 10 minutes? I'm going to leave it up to you two right now.
I just want to say, Anthony, man, it's a pleasure meeting you, man, and talking to you, man. I mean, we're brothers, man, and I hate to, for us to, I hate that we both had to go through what we went through, man. But it's a pleasure to really meet you, bro, and talk to you, bro, and be able to hear your story and hear all the wonderful things that you're doing for incarcerated people. It really touched my heart. I love that type of stuff, man, because I'm just like you. I want to help. I want to help set people free, as many as I can. That's my payback, and that's my desire, and that's my dream. And that's what I'm going to accomplish, man. So, hey, I like to just thank you myself, bro.
All right, definitely, definitely. We're gonna link up after this and do some things to bring about some awareness, and hopefully we can bring some change with the force of others, individuals who are like-minded.
Right.
I leave this. Like I told you, I'm not a man of many words, and I always leave everybody with this. Be the change you want to see, and that's all it is.
That's right. That's enough right there.
Men that are not of words are usually full of wisdom, though. And I have to say, you both have a lot of wisdom and knowledge of what's going on. I want to have both of you back on again, because listening to your stories and even to listen to the progress that you're making along the way is very important. The audience is getting an education, because right now there have been so many people who have been misled by the media, misled by the courts, misled by the prison officials, you know, misled by so many people. Listening to your stories is giving them awareness of some things that they weren't even aware of. We've had a lot of people who made a mistake. We had a lot of people that were young. And I want to say one thing about cultures before we do close. We have cultures, even in the homes, even in your own homes, there's cultures, because no two people are exactly alike. But we have cultures in this system of things where there are people that are brought up in the city, in the poor sections of the city. We have people that are brought up in more prominent backgrounds. We have people that are coming from wealthy homes. One of the things that people always seem to look up to are those that come from wealthy homes. When they're sentenced, they're not sentenced the way that people from the cities are sentenced, or people from other communities are sentenced. They're given less sentences. They're given sentences in mostly federal prisons or in prisons where they are living the life of Riley, as they say. They're not getting abused. They're not getting provoked. They're not getting harassed. Their sentences are short. I want you to think, audience, of those who are from the areas of poverty, the areas of unfortunate lacking any kind of benefit, lacking any kind of education, lacking any kind of social status as we have in this country. There's a lot of people who are struggling without money to go to college. There's a lot of them are struggling to maintain jobs. There's a lot of them that are just asking for a chance. So many people have felt that they don't belong because of their races, because of their religions, because of the the way they grew up. And these are the people, a lot of times, that end up in prison, but not because they're bad, because they weren't given opportunities, because they weren't looked up to, that they weren't talked to, they weren't supported emotionally, financially, or any other way, spiritually even. So I want you to consider these things. When you hear about people that are wrongfully convicted, run to them when they come out to find out how you can help them to stop anyone else from being wrongfully convicted. Run to them to find out how you can help to reduce the prison population and to learn about different cultures, because different cultures mean a lot. And a lot of prisoners have grown up without fathers. They've grown up in homes where there's been addictions. They've grown up in homes where they've been violated, abused. And they have committed offenses, but it doesn't mean that they're bad. There's always hope if there's support out there before they do anything wrong. But if you fail to support them before they go to prison, be out there when they come out and help them. Mass incarceration in the United States has got to stop. Wrongful convictions have got to stop. Harsh sentencing has got to stop. And the parole board needs to be reformed. The prisons need to be reformed. The courts need to be reformed. And when you hear officials talking to the media, make sure you don't believe every word they say, because I, for a fact, can tell you prison officials have lied. And I have heard those lies knowing that they were lying. So I thank you all for being on with us. And I want to thank again Jerome Eubank, and I want to thank Anthony Wilson, and I want to make sure that you know that you're always welcome back on this show. You give me the days and the times that you can be available, and I will bring you back in a minute, because we need more people like you. We need more people like you to make a change in our government systems, our penal systems. So last words, you got 3 minutes, you can say your goodbye. Say your last-minute words, and then we will be closing.
I want to say before I go, Ms. Leon, me, Lawrence, Alice, Sandy, we're going to start a nonprofit called the Activists for Justice Nationwide. Hopefully, before the end of the year, we have that up and running. Activists Justice Nationwide. That's the name of the organization.
Okay, and you'll have to come back on and talk more about that too as you progress. And it's not, a lot of advocates, they think because it's state by state that they don't need to get involved nationwide. But, you know, that's exactly what needs to happen. We may be having state by state, but if the nation itself comes together to demand consistency across the country, I know it'll happen. But we just have to have that manpower, those numbers, and the determination.
That's right.
So once again, I thank you all for being on, audience. I thank you for listening, and I ask you once again to contact Anthony Wilson and also Jerome Banks. Anthony, the name of your program again before we close?
It's called The Great Injustice and The Fresh Program. You can find both of them on Facebook.
Okay, so we thank all of you. And Christine, you tell Lawrence when you see him, tell him that we send our love and we missed him today. And we will closing very soon. Thank you again.
Make sure you get in touch with me, Anthony, when you get time. So I really like to talk to you.
I will send both of you the email. You can connect from there.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Okay.
I'll send you both the emails and then in the phone numbers, and then you can connect. And thank you so much for being on. I really appreciated both of you. This was a blessing. It was on a right time at a right time on this day in particular. Thank you so much, all of you. We are now going to be ending this episode.